Lori, welcome back for another episode of the Travel Vertical Podcast. How have you been?
Very good. Hi, Adam. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. You know, coming off of a long weekend with my family, we did a little getaway to Bear Lake, Idaho. It's actually on the Utah-Idaho border, but we stay on the Idaho side and just had a wonderful time. So ready to get back to work and get to it.
Same here.
Good. Well, you know, I know normally in our episodes, we spend a lot of time going through the jobs and through the different, people that have moved from one place to another. And there are still so many opportunities out there. So I would encourage anybody that's listening to go to thetravelvertical.com and see those jobs and opportunities and news from the industry. But today we have a really fantastic guest that we're going to be talking to. Lori, maybe you could tee it up for us a little bit on who we're going to be listening to today.
Oh, yeah. We have a good get, you know, for the podcast today, because I've been wanting to talk to John Lambeth, who runs Civitas. And we're going to talk about money. We're going to talk about funding for bureaus and the TID model, which is Tourism Improvement District, because it's so popular. It's a revolution in funding. And, you know, without the funding, there won't be any jobs.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've been watching TIDs for a while now. In fact, I've had John on my show. And it's something that I really believe in, because there's destinations that are going from, you know, small to medium-sized funding resources to, you know, funding resources they hadn't even imagined. And so it's really fun to see the impact of these TIDs. So why don't we go ahead and bring John on, and really excited to welcome John Lambeth from Civitas to our show.
Well, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be joining both of you.
Yeah, absolutely. John, would you mind just giving us a brief, you know, like Lori said earlier, if people don't know who you are, we'd be very surprised at this point in the industry. But for those that may not, will you give us a brief background of who you are and what you do?
Sure. Happy to, Adam. I'm actually a real estate lawyer by background. And about 30 years ago, I was working with some property owners who wanted to clean up a downtown area. They didn't have the tools or the mechanisms or the funding to allow them to do that. We researched what other states were doing, and we found a model in other states where there was a dependable, reliable, consistent form of funding for downtown cleanup efforts for security and maintenance and the like. And I drafted a new state law for California. We worked it through the legislature. We got then Governor Pete Wilson to sign it. It went into law, and I thought that would be my first and last project, and it turned out to be my life's work. Right after that, there were destinations around the state that were interested in doing that for their downtowns, and we quickly learned we could take the same kind of funding model and apply it to the tourism industry, and that really was the beginning of Civitas. And since then, we've branched out into sort of all things funding for destination marketing organizations.
Well, what was that model that worked so well back then, the first one?
That model was based on a traditional, what's called a business improvement district model, essentially a group of property owners that band forces to raise money to provide extra security and maintenance and some even promotion work in their downtowns. And we found that same kind of model could be used in the tourism industry, essentially levying an assessment as opposed to a tax. And we can talk more about that in a minute, but it's an assessment, not a tax, on particular businesses, and then providing services that benefit those businesses. And essentially in the tourism industry, that's generally speaking on hotels, although many places now are starting to branch out to attractions and retail and all kinds of other businesses related to the hospitality industry, restaurants, for example. But it's been primarily on hotels, raise that money and then spend the money specifically for tourism promotion kinds of activities. So historically, it was marketing and sales and events, but now it's growing into all kinds of other things that DMOs are growing into. So we're seeing things like sustainability programs. We're getting asked about, and a lot of folks now are talking about workforce programs to help with their workforce development efforts. So we're really seeing this evolve into an even bigger program, but the fundamental is providing stable, reliable funding for destination management organizations.
Yeah, John, I had this brilliant guest speaker in my CDME course that came in and taught me that the difference between a tax and an assessment is who benefits from the funds. Do you have any comment on that?
Well, Adam, you know, that is just the that is the secret sauce of those special districts, right? Is that it is an assessment. Thank you for saying that. It is all about benefit. So a government can tax you, generally speaking, and spend the money as it likes. And so if you have a bed tax, for example, even if you have protections built into that bed tax, either at the local or state level, those protections can be changed by whatever body put that tax in place. So at the local level, they may be able to change that, or at the state level, they may be able to change that. When you levy an assessment, it must be spent for the benefit of the payers by its legal foundation. And so there is no opportunity to divert the funds. There is no opportunity for the city, the county, or the state to say, no, we think this money should be spent elsewhere. And so that really has led to the stability of the funding mechanism.
Well, I think, I mean, as time's gone on, that debate, you know, has been really front and center, I think, because I can remember decades ago when I worked at the New York Convention and Visitors Bureau, that's what it was called before NYC and Co., my boss saying to me, and I didn't really understand, but saying to me, you know, our membership department, who, you know, raises the money from our hotel members. And we had members that were Broadway theaters and airlines and restaurants and lots of members. But, you know, hotels, as you say, was key. And he said, you know, they can spend that on snow removal. You know, if it snows in New York, that can go there. And so it was into a general fund. And that's what you're talking about, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. And, you know, most of the bureaus we work with do still have some kinds of membership programs, and sometimes they'll change those up a bit. But the membership model, when you think about the kinds of funding that works well, the membership model works well when you're providing benefits to members that you're not providing to non-members. And so you have that clear delineation. When you're trying to do things that lift the destination, when you're talking about sort of a rising tide lifts all boats, then if you have a membership model, you've got some people that are paying and some not paying and everybody benefiting. So you've got free riders. And if you can create a compulsory district where if over a majority of them say, we want to put this in place and you can work it through the local government, then everybody's in. You have a level playing field, no free riders.
Makes sense.
So, John, I've heard a couple of things you've actually mentioned a couple of times, legislation or local government. And for many of us listening, what we hear is long, slow, arduous process. How realistic is it for a destination that may not have explored this type of a funding model to even be able to achieve something like this? Where does the process start? What do you have to go through? How long does it take? And is it worth it?
Well, it's a great question, Adam. These projects are not, generally speaking, for the faint of heart. They are not typically easy, quick programs. They do take a while, but the reward is significant. It can really, the words we hear most from our DMO leaders is it was a game changer for our bureau. And so the process is one where is first understanding what the legal foundation is in your state. In states that don't have specific TID legislation, we look at existing authority. We look at their business improvement district laws. We look at their home rule authority, which is the power of cities and counties to legislate on matters of local concern where they haven't been preempted by the state legislature. And oftentimes we can set up districts based on those. So, for example, the district we did in Memphis, Tennessee, we used home rule authority there to do it. And we've used both of those mechanisms many times. If both of those opportunities are not there legally, then you need to do state legislation. And we have seen an explosion of state legislation happening, really. Before 2021, the most we had ever seen in any given year was one state adopting TID legislation. Then in 2021, we had three states adopt, and it looks like in 2022, we're going to have another three states. So there is a lot of activity. But once they understand sort of what's the legal aspect, then the process is one of consensus building with the hotels, consensus building with the local government. You go through a process of writing the plan, getting industry support, and finally hearings. The process itself, for a lot of folks, is a 10-month process of district formation, anywhere from 8 to 12 months. If you do legislation, of course, that's in addition to that 8 to 12 months. And, you know, legislation in some places, so Boston and in Massachusetts, Martha went through that process quickly after a year or two of having a struggle statewide on doing that. And in other places, you know, they're on their second or third year attempt to try to get the legislation in place.
John, I've got two questions. I want to know, because you've said state a lot of times, so I want to know about, is that cities too? And then when you mentioned Boston, I want to know something, because when I worked at the Boston Convention and Visitors Bureau, it was the question of, you know, Boston, yeah, but what about Cambridge? What about Somerville? What about the, you know, surrounding communities? Can we promote Harvard Square? You know, because it's not in Boston, it's in Cambridge. So those are my two questions. Does this thing work for cities as well as for states commonly? And also, how does a place like Boston, Greater Boston Convention Visitors Bureau, deal with the regional aspect of the city?
Great questions. The issue of state versus local, there's a couple of questions there, I think, within that question. One is, these districts work both at the local level and the state level. In other words, you can have a district that is representing a local or regional DMO and is just in that territory, or you can have one that is statewide. In California, we have a statewide TID, essentially, that funds Visit California, and it raises $120 million a year that is dedicated, secure funding. They don't have to come and ask for it every year. It is their money, and it is set aside, and they are essentially entitled to that money. So they spend very little time on those efforts compared to what we see with most other state travel offices. In terms of authority, if you're a local DMO and authority, most local DMOs, we can get a TID done without them going to the state, without doing state legislation. In a few places, we've had more of a struggle where the lawyers are reluctant. It's a new mechanism. They don't want to be the first, those kinds of things. And we do end up having to do some state law tweaks. But in most states, we can do it without going to the state legislature. And then with respect to Boston, that is also a very good question, because one of the first things that Martha told us when she got there is, look, I represent dozens of communities. I think there were like 42 cities and towns within her area that the CVB covered. And you can choose where you set your boundaries for a tourism improvement district. And there are many that are multi-jurisdictional. There, what they ended up choosing was Boston and Cambridge. And so that district includes both cities. It does not go back out into the other towns, but it includes those two cities because that's where most of the hospitality industry was located. And when you do that, it's actually not a very complicated process. One jurisdiction is the lead. The other must consent. So in this case, Cambridge consented to the city of Boston forming within the city of Cambridge. And it worked great. And that's been a very powerful model and strong model.
Well, there you go. That means that Harvard and MIT are following Boston.
That's right.
So, John, I'm going to make more of a comment here. You may want to respond to it, or you may just want to let it lie. I feel like I'm going to do a little bit of your job for you here, because I'm going to make a little bit of a pitch for TIDs. I've talked to a lot of destinations that have worked on TIDs, that have gotten it done. I've even heard about or chatted with Mobile, Alabama, I think they set the record for your longest process to create a TID, and they're now benefiting from it. And if there's somebody listening that feels like, man, this does feel like an overwhelming or daunting process, I think what I would do is go beyond just what I feel like I can accomplish, but start thinking a little bit about legacy at the destination, because it does take work to get these created. But these districts benefit the destination in perpetuity long term. And I think that that's such a powerful part of this, is our job is to make the destination a better place, whether that's a better place to live, a better place to travel. That's our job. And I can't think of a better way to do it than securing the funds to allow the destination to be able to make life better for both the visitors and residents forever. And I see the TID as the method of doing that.
We know our, thank you for that. We know our DMOs are doing such great work and they are so important to those communities. What we hear time and time again from the DMO directors is that these are legacy projects. And when you think about Boston, going from a budget of $8 million a year to a budget of $35 million a year,
wow.
You think about the amazing shift, the amazing change in what that bureau is able to do. It's very common for us to double a DMO's budget, sometimes triple. I mean, five times is a little unusual, but we do see it. And it is an amazing result that will be, we think, with those destinations for a long, long time. One of the things we try to do to make it a little easier on folks when they're getting started too is we can take that upfront process and cut it up into chunks. So if somebody wants to just look at the feasibility piece of it and they want to sort of start to dip their toe in the water to look and see from a legal standpoint, how are they positioned? From a standpoint with their lodging industry, are they supportive of this kind of thing? We'll do like a feasibility study for them that's a three-month project so they can have a very sort of constrained time frame, short, they know what's involved in it, and it gives them some great feedback, and it's basically the steps we would go through to create a district anyway, so they're not, you know, it's not costing them anything extra. So a lot of our clients have said, hey, we'd like to go through that process first. Then once we get through that, we'll form the rest of the district.
So let's say that happens. I know it happened recently in Boston, but then what happens to the membership department? Sometimes membership is called partners now. I know they call it partners at the San Francisco Travel Association, but anyway, same thing. So what happens? Do they no longer pursue members for support, or how does the membership model get affected?
They don't usually do away with the membership model. Some places have, but most don't. They look at restructuring it. So if now, let's say the TID is on lodging, they might give a break to lodging that's in the TID and paying. They might give them a break on their membership dues compared to others. But they usually keep it because there's so many other partners involved, right? There may be, for Boston's example, what about lodging partners outside of Cambridge and Boston? They still want them involved and to be buying into those programs. Certainly all the other members of the hospitality community, whether it's restaurant, retail, attractions, all of those folks. So most of them are still keeping a membership program, but they may be tweaking how those funds are raised. And by the way, I'll give a shout out here to Nina Winston. She is doing some great work on membership programs, and we're working with her more and more as part of our emphasis to look at all things funding for bureaus.
John, as I think about this, you know, all of us struggle with, we don't know what we don't know, right? Like, this is a concept that I think we're all very interested in, but there's parts of it that I'm sure it would take you hours to bring us up to speed on, and we can't hit everything. But my question is there something that Lori and I maybe haven't asked you about this process or TIDs in general that you think would be important for our audience to be aware of?
One of the things we get asked a lot, sometimes there's some real fear around bringing a new stable source of funding to a destination, and the fear revolves around their existing funding. So a lot of folks say to us, gee, extra funding sounds great. We think our lodging partners are supportive of this. We'd love to see it, but we're really fearful that we're going to lose what we have. And so we don't want to go down that path for a concern about what we'll call the baseline funding. And it's a legitimate concern, right? Anytime you talk about a new stable source of funding, the question invariably comes up, what happens to your existing funding? And this is not a new problem. Business improvement districts have been dealing with this for 60 years. We've been dealing with this in TIDs for 25 years. And there are some very good solutions to that problem. Most jurisdictions, let me start with the outliers. A few jurisdictions have said, we don't want that other money anymore. We don't want strings attached. We don't want the political influence that comes along with discretionary dollars. So we won't take those anymore. Those are outliers. Most destinations say we absolutely want those existing dollars and we want to protect them. And so we work very hard with them to, number one, treat it as a threshold issue when we come in and we talk to the city or county and say, this is a 100% supplemental program and the hotels are going to insist upon it. And if you don't do that, then there won't be any district. And number two, we build it into all of the documents. So when we're writing the ordinances, when we're writing the resolutions, when we're writing the plans, we write into those plans that this is supplemental to that baseline funding. And we write in an intention to get rid of the district and that the stakeholders, we preserve this power with the stakeholders will get rid of the district if you take away the baseline funding. And most cities and counties have said, that sounds like a good deal to us. You're not asking us for more money. You're going to go raise more money. You're going to bring more visitors to our destination. You're going to help us and help you. And we don't have to spend anything more, but you're asking us to agree to keep the same level of funding we've had all along. We'll agree to that. And so that's a normal deal that we work out.
And you're essentially ensuring that they're not going to be continuously asking for more and more and more from their primary funding source, because now they can get this supplementary funding that allows them to not constantly need more and more and more.
That's right. That's right. And that appetite is insatiable, right? As we all know. And I can't tell you how many times I've gone into destination and heard this story, which is the government, city or county came to us 3 years ago. They said, we're going to raise bed tax. We want to raise it by 2 points. We'll give the Bureau a point and we'll take a point. And won't that be great? And the Bureau and the hospitality entities agree to it. And within a couple of years, there's a new mayor or a new council or a new staff that says, you know, we really like all 2% of that. And in fact, end up taking that money away. And that has happened over and over and over again. And this is a way to legally protect the bureaus from that kind of a problem.
So, hey, John, something interesting that you told me I wanted to just hit on. The first one was in West Hollywood, a tiny little place.
Was. It was in West Hollywood. Yes. In 1990. That's exactly right.
And how many came along after that?
In the first few years, it was very slow. In fact, in the first 10 years, there were only three of them. The other was Costa Mesa and then Sacramento. And once Sacramento went in the year 2000, that really opened up a lot of interest around the state. And now in California, of course, this is a way of doing business. We have 110 of these in California. All the major jurisdictions are funded this way. We're now starting to see capital improvements funded through this mechanism. We have a new sporting complex in Placer Valley that was funded that way. San Francisco funded part of the Moscone Center that way. We funded a new ballroom in Sacramento through a TID. So we are starting to see a real growth in the mechanism, not only for stable, secure marketing and promotions activities, but also building facilities. And more we're hearing, what we hear a lot from folks now is a real interest in building sporting facilities. And I think you're going to see TIDs used all across the country to build lots of sporting facilities in the next 5 or 10 years.
Interesting. We see the same thing on the job side, that more DMOs introducing, either joining at the hip with an existing sports division or creating their own or hiring someone in that role, to sit at the boardroom table. Sports marketing came into its own in a new way, I think, during COVID.
It's huge. We were very lucky to get a sports marketing person. Roxanne, who's up in Michigan, joined us from Choose Chicago, the sports commission there. Her background is in sports, and she has just done a phenomenal job. We work really closely with Al Kidd at Sports ETA and their team, and we are doing more and more to try to get the word out. If you're looking for funding for sports, we have a tool for you.
Brilliant.
John, thank you so much. This has been a really valuable conversation. I think it was important for our audience to hear. If people want to learn more about a TID for their destination or have questions or didn't understand all that they needed to in the 25 minutes or so that we've talked, what's the best way for them to get a hold of you and learn more?
Well, one is, of course, to go to our website, and our website has a lot of information on it. That's www.civitasadvisors.com. You can also reach us at our main office in Sacramento at 916-437-4300. And if you prefer email, you can always email me at jlambeth, L-A-M-B-E-T-H, jlambeth at civitasadvisors.com.
Well, thanks, John. Really appreciate your time. This has been incredibly valuable for us and for our listeners.
Thanks, John. TID Revolution. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Adam. Thank you, Lori. Thank you for having me.
And thanks, everybody, for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, please don't forget to leave us a rating or a review. It really helps us to continue to grow the show and bring you amazing guests like John. Thanks, Lori.
Thank you, Adam.